Hi, everybody.
Hi.
So today, I'm going to talk about something that I talked about in retreat just a week ago. So those of you who are in retreat are going to have the pleasure of hearing about this again. I'm sure it will be a deep and abiding pleasure. I'm going to talk about gates into Zen. I'm going to talk about six gates into Zen, into Basho Zen in particular. Basho is the 17th century Zen teacher and haiku poet. And I'm going to do all six in 45 minutes, whereas I spent 3 hours doing down at the retreat. But I'm also going to link them together because I didn't do that at the retreat. And I'm going to suggest that these gates into Zen, these gates into opening into stillness and manifesting your life in stillness wherever you are, that there's actually a sequential process. It's not linear because nothing in life is linear, because it regresses and it turns back on itself and it does it again. But it is sequential, nevertheless. So the gates I'm going to be talking about are longing, saying yes, uncertainty, coming home, awakening, and permeability. So starting with longing. Since we're not raised in a Buddhist culture, many of us who come to Zen come out of longing for some deep quiet, for some deep composure in our lives. And longing is part of the human condition. So Basho's poem, even after he was greatly enlightened, is in Kyoto. Hearing the cuckoo, I long for Kyoto. We have that longing wherever we are. We feel like we're missing something, like we're not fully enough engaged. It doesn't matter what level we're at. in his book, The Narrow Road Within, he talks about practitioners, pilgrims, poets who spend their lives on the path, on the road, because he was a road guy, but this is a walking road. This is not a driving road. Remember, this is the 17th century, and so he spent most of his life walking, sitting and walking. But he would walk for 20 to 30 miles a day from one place to another, and he talked about many people who walked with him who actually died on the path. Now, that sounds a little melodramatic, but that's what he talked about, and I'm sure it's the case. So here's a poem of his. I'm resolved to bleach on the moors, my body pierced by the wind. So that kind of resolution, to really go within, to deal with all the tumult that comes up when you're sitting facing a wall day after day after day, but continue going within. And just being with it, without evaluating, without comparing, is an arduous process. But if you long for deep quiescence, it will help you get focused. It'll help you come back time and time again. So it's a deep longing is actually. I think it's almost impossible to get a taste of this great spaciousness that's always here without a longing for it, without a real longing. And in the Buddhist path, we call that's the second step in the path, appropriate intention. We learn about the path, and then we have an intention, which comes from that longing, an intention to practice, an intention to practice the remaining steps on the path. to practice speech, action, and livelihood based on our wanting to manifest a deep quietness, to meditate wholeheartedly, to concentrate in a focused way. As messed up as our mind is, the longing brings us back. Brings us back, brings us back, brings us back. And from the longing, that's the first gate, it's natural then to have an intention. And I talk about that intention just briefly now. But the intention has to be a saying yes. A saying yes. I'm saying yes to this practice. I'm saying yes to sitting down for 20 minutes every day, for 40 minutes every day, and just doing this practice regardless of what happens. So saying yes, saying yes. So the longing without the focus of saying yes and not the intention of being on the path gets all dispersed. And it can lead to confusion. So the saying yes. And Rumi's poem, say yes quickly, says Rumi. Say yes quickly. Because we have to say yes before we think about it. If we think about it, we'll end up saying no half the time. Forget your life. Say God is great. Get up. You think you know what time it is. It's time to pray. You've carved so many little figurines, too many. Don't knock on any random door like a beggar. Reach your long hands out to another door, beyond where you go on the street where everyone says, how are you, and no one says, how aren't you? Tomorrow you'll see what you've broken and torn tonight, thrashing in the dark. Inside you there's an artist you don't know about. He's not interested in how things look different in moonlight. If you are here unfaithfully with us, you're causing terrible damage. If you've opened your loving to God's love, you're helping people you don't know and you have never seen. Is what I say true? Say yes quickly, if you know, if you've known it from before the beginning of the universe. So our yes has to be in our activities, in our activities, in our speech, in our action, in the way we work with our spouse, with our loved ones, with the people we don't love, the people who dissed us. Oh, saying yes, saying yes, saying yes. So here's a Basho poem. For one who says, I'm tired of children, there are no flowers. Saying yes, saying yes. So I had my grandkids here for a month, my wife and I did, and we are old. We feel old when they're here. We feel ancient because they're like this. You know, they're little boys, and they're all over the place. And of course we got tired. Of course we got tired. But what an opportunity to be with life, whether they're your own grandkids or the grandkids of the chipmunks outside. What an opportunity just to be with them. Just to be participating in it, just to be appreciating it. And you can always come back and appreciate that energy that's always here. That's always here. But as soon as you say, oh, I'm tired of them, you close down. You get tired, but what are you tired of? You're just tired. Just be tired. Don't say you're tired of them. Then you do. When you do, then those little chipmunk kitties out there get overlooked. We don't appreciate them, and pretty soon fall will be over and they'll be gone. So say yes. Say yes. And if we give our love when we say yes, there's enjoyment there, and we can keep saying it forever. Forever. Of course, we have to also have to say yes to relaxing. yes to saying no. I need some time by myself right now. But that's not dismissing. That's just saying yes to no. Yes to no. Do you understand? It's not the yes that shuts people out of your life. That shuts this wonderful dance that the universe is going through out of your life. It invites it. It invites it. So, but when we do this practice of saying yes, when we do this practice of this path where we try to practice through the speech that's loving and actions that are kind, often we forget, and people have to remind us. People have to remind us. And that's okay. That's okay. And often when we do this stuff, when we do our meditation, we don't get any results. So that's why saying yes leads to uncertainty. It's not certain that this meditation is going to help you. It's not certain that if you're nice to your neighbor is going to even notice that you're nice to her. It's not certain. Everything is completely uncertain. Taking that in, taking uncertainty in. The reason we have practice period coming up on Wednesday, and I'll put in a plug for it. This is the last day to sign up for it. We have about 27 people signed up, but it's an opportunity to say yes together to do Zen practice. A group of people together are saying yes, that we'll do this. We'll practice for 7 weeks together. Say yes together. And there'll be a lot of uncertainty. There always is. A lot of times people aren't able, they make commitments to sit and they aren't able to honor them, and then they're embarrassed and they don't even want to show up in class. And, you know, but that's life, isn't it? That's life. Everything's uncertain. We do our best. We fall down. We get up. We fall down. We get up. Right? Right? Luckily, we have this kind of a container in Zen practice that helps us come back and say yes time and time again, regardless of how uncertain things are, regardless of how uncertain. Just come back. Just come back. Just say yes. So Basho lived in a time of famine, flood, and social turmoil, as it seems like all these teachers lived in. You read Basho, read Rokan, you read Dogen. They all live in times of famine, flood, and social turmoil. But anyway, he did. And desperate. What'd you say?
As opposed to now, where we don't have those.
Well, in the United States. Well, that's a good point. We seem to be getting into it, don't we?
Yeah.
Desperate poverty, which we don't experience here in this room. So desperate that children were being abandoned in the 1680s. So Basho saw a two-year-old child on the road when he was on the path, abandoned by the side of the road, as he saw children sometimes abandoned by the side of the road. And he threw it food, but he didn't stop. And then later, he wrote this poem, and he rebuked himself. He rebuked himself later, and he wrote this poem. What of this child given to autumn winds? What of this child given to autumn winds? So sometimes we fall down, right? Things are so uncertain that sometimes we're not compassionate. Sometimes we say to ourselves, we're too tired to be compassionate. Then we just own up to it, right? Then we just take a deep breath and notice it and come back. And so this is a poem of Basho's I don't like to read, because I want Basho to be totally open and wonderful. And I think, geez, how could he do that? But how could he do that? How could I do that? Think about things you've done in your life. How could you do them? Zen master, no Zen master, being practicing for 6 months or 60 years, it's all the same thing. It's all the same thing. We're flawed. We're flawed. We make mistakes. But because we go down, we can come up. And we do. We do. That's the spirit of saying yes to uncertainty. Saying yes. And then a haiku poet, Isas, said about uncertainty, while the dewdrop world is the dewdrop world, yet. While the dewdrop world is the dewdrop world, yet. So this is after Isas' own child died. His own two-year-old child died. Can you imagine that? Of course, in those days, a lot of little kids died even when they were at home. So he's acknowledging uncertainty, and he's saying, but yeah, yet. Isn't there a different way? But of course, he's also, as I pointed out in the retreat, he's a Pure Land Buddhist. So he can say, yet, and think about Amida Buddha, who will invite him into the Western paradise when he dies himself. But we're Zen Buddhists. So our yet is right here in the present, right here in this big presence of we don't know. We don't know. We don't know anything. But in this presence, there's stillness. And there's great energy. But it's not physical energy. It's the energy of just, I don't know what it is. Just the life itself, I guess. Life itself. So we have a present. We have the assurance of present. Not a future. So when Basho turned 50 years old, which was old in those days, he was very famous by the time he was 50 years old. He was famous as a poet and a Zen teacher, and he had lots of followers. And so that when he went on his 20 to 30 mile travels, he had an entourage of people following him and asking him questions and wanting support and wanting to endorse his poems and wanting to imbue his calmness. This was not easy for him. It was not easy for him because he's as many spiritual seekers are. He was quite introverted. So when he turned 50, he writes that he was crushed by other people and their needs. That's interesting, isn't it? He was crushed by other people and their needs. And then he took a sick nephew in, and his sick nephew died. And then he became overwhelmed by his own depression at 50 years old, after having been this great haiku and Zen teacher. You never know. Uncertainty, right? Uncertainty. So he went in retreat. He was smart enough to go into retreat. Every day at Zen Center here, we go into retreat. I hope you go into retreat for a few minutes every day at home. Go into retreat. Sometimes short retreat, sometimes long retreat. That's where you can discover how to live joyfully in uncertainty. That's where you discover it. No place else. He went into retreat for a month, and he didn't allow any visitors, and he just practiced stillness, did his writing, practiced zazen, and after a month, he returned to the world, and his haikus lightened up again the way they had been. His poetry lightened up the way it had been. After he came out of his retreat, one of his first poems was "The Roadside Wild Rose Eaten by My Horse." The roadside wild rose eaten by my horse. Uncertainty. Uncertainty. Great delight in uncertainty. Great joy in uncertainty. In the unpredictability of anything and everything. Nothing that we need to be too somber about, right? Everything's eating everything else already anyway. Might as well enjoy it. right? So, if we practice, do our Zen practice, saying yes, day after day, month after month, year after year, in uncertainty, in comedy, in tragedy, in drama, whatever, we practice it, then we're, it's not so hard for us to enter the next gate, which is coming home. And actually, coming home is a practice in and of itself, coming home. Coming home is a way in which we practice with uncertainty. Coming home is the realization that spiritual fulfillment isn't, we won't find it someplace else. It's always right here. It's always right here. It's no place. It's not later on. It's not when I get less depressed or less horny or less whatever. It's right here. It's right here in our immediate experience with no mediator. No mediator. Always we want a mediator because we think the mediator will help us change. But this is not about it. It's about coming home to this frail body, to this out of control body, coming home in uncertainty to it and just being with it. With kindness, with openness. Saying yes. Saying yes. So, Dallas teacher says, every place the wind carries me is home. Every place the wind carries us is home. Every place. But we go off over hill, over dale, trying to get something. When here it is. Here it is. You've got it. You've got it. The whole deal already. But we forget. And someone reminds us, right? But we remind ourselves. So here are a couple of Basho poems. Snowy morning, alone, still able to chew dried salmon. Well, that's a coming home poem. He's coming home to, it's snowy, he's all by himself, he's getting old and his teeth are getting bad because he doesn't have the best 17th century dentist in Japan. But he's still able to chew the peasant food, which is dried salmon. That's it. Coming home. Coming home. Here he's on a journey, also in his old age. Roadside skeleton thoughts. Wind penetrates through to the heart. So he's having some physical difficulties. He probably is seeing, I don't know what the roadside skeleton thoughts exactly means, except that maybe he's seeing skeletons or can imagine himself dying. So he's just seeing that. He's just being with that. Instead of wanting something different, he's just coming home to that. Just coming home to his own impermanence, his own deterioration. Deterioration is fertility. Deterioration is growth. Because the two go together. And here's Jane Hirschfield's poem. Jane Hirschfield gets credit for being my inspiration for these talks. She gets all the credit. No, she and Robert Aiken, they each get half credit. So you should hang out with them. I would hang out with them if I were you guys. So here's Jane Hirschfield's poem, which I think is the first part of the poem, I think, is about uncertainty. And the second part of the poem is about coming home to uncertainty, just coming home and being with it, discovering its dynamism. So the first part. There is something out in the dark that wants to correct us. Each time I think this, it answers that. Answers hard in the heart grammar's strictness. If I then say that, it too is taken away, between certainty and the real, an ancient enmity. Uncertainty. Then, coming home. And the cat here is the one that helps her. When the cat waits in the path hedge, no cell of her body is not waiting. This is how she is able to completely disappear. I would like to enter the silence portion as she does. To live amid the great vanishing as a cat must live, one shadow fully at ease inside another. If a cat can do it, you can. Yeah, really. Why not? You don't do it in your own way. You won't do it in quite the... Well, you know, a cat does it in a really cool way, right? Really cool. But your own way is really cool, too. And so lots of religion talks about, including shamanism, which I've studied and practiced a lot. And when I was younger, going on spirit journeys, encountering lots of spirits and working with spirits. But in this practice, we bring the spirit home. The spirit is always here. The spirit is our breathing. And the term spirit, is etymological origin, is to breathe. Spirare. So we spirare. Here's the spirit. Doesn't matter if my teeth are going, if I'm going, if I did something bad, here's the spirit right here in my spirare, in my breathing. Right? Right? It doesn't matter if it's shallow breathing or deep breathing or nose breathing or mouth breathing or poor breathing. You're breathing. You're breathing. So, then the gate of coming home, that's the fourth gate. Can be a natural transition into experiences of awakening or enlightenment. Awakening or enlightenment. And I'm just going to give one poem about that. By Basho. Cutting a tree, seeing the sod trunk it grew from, tonight's moon. Cutting a tree, seeing the sod trunk it grew from, tonight's moon. So there's an enlightened moment. An enlightened moment. He's sawing, he's working hard, he's focusing on, he's saying yes to cutting away that dead wood from that tree. When we sit here in the Zendo or at home day after day, we're saying yes to letting that dead wood just fall away. Just cutting it away with our focused, compassionate, one-pointed effort. Just letting it. We're cutting it away. Not in a violent way. In a wholehearted way, from our heart. We just let it, the dead wood, drop away. It seems like there's nothing but dead wood sometimes. I know that. I've been around you guys. I've experienced that too. It's all dead wood. Well, let the... Just sit with the dead wood then. Just sit with it. Just breathe. Just spirare into it. Okay? It falls away. It falls away. More dead wood comes. That falls away. And so he's cutting. And then all of a sudden it falls away. And the full moon. The stillness. The energy. The brilliance. Everything about the full moon. The full moon is... often uses a symbol for awakening in Zen. It's almost a cliche. But for Basho in this case, it's not a cliche. And also the cutting through the wood, we can imagine leaves a yellow cut that matches the color of the moon. So the dead wood's cut away. There's the yellow of the wood, the yellow of the moon. Enlightenment. Enlightenment. Awakening to something beyond you and me. Beyond everything. And yet right here. Right here. You can all have this experience, you guys. This isn't for some advanced people. Not for advanced people. It's for all of us. This advanced people thing is something we create. We create this. Instead of coming back home. When we create this, then just come back home, okay? Just come back home. And the last one, continuing with my transition here. So, if we do this practice of coming home in uncertainty, saying yes time and time again, regardless of what happens, we will have little moments of awakening, big moments of awakening, awakening which seems to go on forever, awakening which lasts this long, and then we say, oh, where'd that go? I want more of that. I need more moon. I need another saw. Another retreat. Oh, this retreat's over. I'll do the next retreat. When's that start? I blew this one. When's the next one? That's what people do. They think, oh, and the next retreat. Then they get into the next retreat. Oh, da, da, da. The end of the second day, they're finally getting calm. The last 10 minutes, they're finally calm. This is life. This is life. Because our minds are totally out of control. Human beings are totally out of control with our minds. No wonder they've made such a mess of things. No wonder they've made such a mess of the world in Basho's time and in our time. Awakening, awakening, awakening to something fresh, something you didn't anticipate, you didn't expect. And something that stills all that turbulence, all that toing and froing, all that wishing and wanting, all that complaining and whatever. It stills it. Because that's no longer the center of your being. That's not the center of your being anyway. Just made up center. Just a made up center of your being. So Zazen is an instrument for exploring a single moment's precise perception and depth. Precise perception and depth. We don't see it often because we're just caught by the dead wood, but here it is, right through the dead wood, right around the dead wood. Great depth and wonderful perception. Yes, perception immediate. Wow. Look at that fan. Wow. Look at it. The whole universe. The whole universe. Look at that. Look at the reflection of your glasses. My goodness. Come over here. Woo. Do you know what I mean, you guys? So, we do this practice. We have some little experiences of awakening, some of the big experiences. We get excited about it, but don't get too excited about it because then you'll just turn it into more dead wood. And that we become more permeable. That's the sixth gate. We become more permeable. We become more porous. We begin as we see and hear for ourselves from this own home. Then things begin to speak through us and with us, with us. So Basho says, to learn about the pine tree, go to the pine tree. To learn about the bamboo, go to the bamboo. Pretty simple, isn't it? Pretty simple, almost a Buddhist cliche, a Zen cliche. But try it. Try it. Do it with your whole heart. Do it with great longing and say yes. And then, so Basho, as I said, was a wandering practitioner and poet. He was not a monk, although he wore monk's robes and shaved his head. So he never did any formal practice, but he practiced all the time, really. He practiced all the time. And his concern was not about destination, was not about having an awakening experience, but about the quality of being, a quality of attentiveness, the quality of openness, moment to moment to moment, whether it's dried salmon, deteriorating teeth, the horse eating the beautiful rose, a child smiling, chipmunks out in the yard, same thing. So in Zen, we're not focusing on mastery. We're just not. Well, you will want to focus on mastery, and you will want to because it's human. But we don't gain it. We can focus on it. We don't gain it. In Zen. And here's Basho. If we were to gain mastery over things, we would find that their lives would vanish under us without a trace. Isn't that right? When you gain mastery, everything sort of dies. You've got it. You're the man. You're the woman. You've got it. You sort of, your ego shell becomes totally rigid, because you've got it. So Basho is, as a good Zen poet, is interested on what lies on both sides of the skin's millimeter thick boundary and the permeability. We don't notice that because we're in our heads, but our attention in this practice begins to leave our heads. It just gradually on its own becomes an attention which is more cellular. It is not just head bound. It's cellular. But this happens in its own time, and you can't push the river, and you're going to fail a lot. You will fail a lot. If you don't fail a lot, it's impossible to get a taste of this. I'm sorry. Impossible. And once you've got a taste of it, you'll fail some more. But, you know, as my old bard said, there's no success like failure, and no failure is no success at all. Some old guy said that once. So, a couple more by him. Three or four more. Permeability. We're still on permeability. This autumn, why do I grow old? A bird entering clouds. This autumn, why do I grow old? A bird entering clouds. And he has a feeling that he's approaching death when he writes this. In fact, he is. And the next day, he writes letters to different people, including one to his older brother, apologizing for dying before him. Apologizing for dying before him, for abandoning him. And on the final day of his life, he was too weak to write any haiku, and he seemed to be kind of in a coma. His students thought he was in a coma, and I know you guys won't like this image, but tough. He woke up out of his coma and he saw flies gathered around his body, anticipating you know what. And he laughed and said, this is his last haiku, although he didn't consider it a haiku. They seem happy about the unexpected gift. Permeability. This is the Buddha nature. This is your own nature. Really, this is your nature. Not anything else. Right here. Permeability. Okay, two more permeable ones. This one has some a little bit of synesthesia in it. Synesthesia?
Mixing sense modalities.
Yes, mixing sense modalities. Thank you, Jeff. Mixing sense modalities. Dusk. Bells quiet. Fragrance rings, night struck from flowers. Dusk. Bells quiet, fragrance rings, night struck from flowers. So you, permeability. The scent of the trees blossoming as it gets dark, the bell sound, the twilight, the flower scent, all together before we make something out of them, before we make something out of them. And the final one, permeability one. How admirable, a man seeing lightning and no awakening. How admirable, a man seeing lightning and no awakening. You get that one, you guys? Everybody wants awakening, so nobody ever sees the lightning. I think, well, maybe when the next lightning comes. Maybe when this pain really passes through my leg. How admirable. A man seeing lightning and no awakening. So those are the six gates. As I said, I do see a progression through them. But also, Basho had longing at the end of his life. Some longing. And also at the beginning of your practice, you could experience some real permeability. Sometimes the first time you come into Zen Center, it's you're a beginner, so you don't know anything. And you sit down and you breathe for 10 minutes and you have some wonderful feeling. It never comes back again for the next five years because you've lost your beginner's mind. So even though there is a progression, don't get caught on the progression. They're all gates. Okay, that's what I want to talk about. Be glad to entertain stories or questions or comments or whatever. Anybody? Jeff.
Last night, standing on the corner of 6th and Hennepin with some friends, the Twins game is letting out. Traffic is flowing in both directions. People across the street in the sidewalk cafe having dinner, having a great time. Down Hennepin, on a bicycle, a man comes up to the stoplight. Across his shoulders, a very large cat on a leash, totally relaxed, taking it all in.
Hey, there you go. There you go.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes.
If that's something like, I'm sort of getting caught between uncertainty and permeability.
Oh, getting caught between uncertainty and permeability, okay.
What's the bridge? I mean, how do you see that?
Okay. Could you hear her question? Okay. Well, that's interesting. Well, really permeability, if we're really at the moment we're really permeable, there's total embracing of uncertainty. We don't even know about uncertainty. We're just embraced it so much. So that's one thing. Everything is uncertain, and if we embrace it, then whatever happens to our body and mind, we can just be with it. On the other hand, if we're permeable for a moment without even thinking about uncertainty, then we're able to accept uncertainty. If I'm just open to my if I'm just open to the numbness in my toes right here. I just really experienced this numbness, which only happens in my left foot. if I just let the numbness be here, when the numbness increases up my leg, the uncertainty of that won't bother me because I'm too attuned just to the openness, just to the being with it, just to the presence. Does that make sense to you? You don't say yes, you say yes. You're going to think about it. Well, all right. But why don't you sit in meditation with it instead? Let the thoughts come in and go out, but don't think about it. Let it think about itself in meditation. How about that? All right. What else? Sure.
All the examples you gave seem to also fit with just a sense of humor. Are there humorless examples too?
Well, that's a good question, but this practice is about, we say enlightenment, but it is about lightening up. What happens is that you really lighten up if you do this practice, and you actually are able to see the humor in just about anything if you're permeable. Now, when you shut down, we all shut down sometimes, we're impermeable. Why did he do that to me? Why did he insult me that way? I don't see the humor. But if I come back to sparare, to breathing with him, I don't know what Ben did to me, but something rude. then I lighten up. I think, oh, that was ridiculous, Tim. Just let go of it. So enlightenment is lightening up. So forget enlightenment. Just lighten up a little bit. Just be permeable. Yeah, it's all humorful. Everything. Yeah. Sure. Ow. That's humorful too. But that's not to say there isn't great tragedy and great trauma. There is. It's just a human condition. But there's a comic side to the deepest tragedy. It's because... How is that?
Great.
Okay. Who else?
Just a comment. I like how you say sparare.
All right.
I'm just going to go into my head all day. I like that word. It's good.
Thank you, Jane Hirschfield, for telling me that. Because I never studied Latin, I'll tell you that.